The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea from The Athletic. On this episode, Force and Blues dismantle Juventus, we riff on Man United's pain ahead of Sunday, and plenty more besides. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Here we are again then, listener. It's Thursday for us, which means it's time for your second weekly dose of Straight Outta Cobham. Joining me for this episode, please welcome Simon Johnson.
Hello.
Looking forward to the quiz later?
Hello.
Also with us is Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Right, to celebrate Black Friday, you can now take advantage of our best deal of the year. You can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of just £1 a month for a full 12 months. But hurry, the offer ends at midnight on Monday. That's November the 29th. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Simon, pick an article, please, that you've written over the last year or so that's one that you're particularly proud of that might drive people to take advantage of this magnificent deal?
Well, there's so many, but I just think it's kind of reflective of where Chelsea are right now. What a great season they're having. That the seeds were sown with Tuchel's pre-season, and I wrote about an in-depth article with Ralf Hunnigstein about how he approached his first pre-season as Chelsea coach. The message he sent to the players, how he inspired them, how he prepared for this season. And we're seeing the fruits of his labours now. And that's the kind of in-depth read that no one else, or we like to think no one else does in the kind of detail that we do and the insight that we provide. So give that a buzz, give that a read, and that will give you an insight into exactly what we do.
How about you, Dom?
Well, I'm going to promote my colleague Charlotte Harper's piece. She went over to France to look into what's been going on with Kira Hamroui and Aminata Diallo at Paris Saint-Germain, and the incident that occurred after a team meal quite recently, where Hamroui was beaten up basically by two blokes in balaclavas, and prompted various arrests. No charges as yet, as far as I know, but just for a sort of the intrigue around that story and the shockwaves that it caused in French football, not least when they went and played Lyon in a subsequent game, lost 6-1, I think. The shockwaves still being felt over in France, and it's well worth a read. It's a really good in-depth piece of reporting.
Yeah, I would second that. I also liked Simon's interview with Rob Green, which was quite a long time ago, but gave us a lot of insight into the Maurizio Sarri era. But anyway, it's all good. Go and sign up if you haven't already. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to do so. Right, later we'll hear from Adam Crafton on the Old Trafford-based sitcom, but there's only one place that we can start today.
James, look at that. Oh, it's a pretty bad mistake by McKennie. Chelsea tonight have been rampant. Big mistake by Weston McKennie. Pretty costly, and Timo Werner has his goal to put icing on the cake.
The team did very, very well. It's so tough to score goals, to create chances, and we scored so many, we created so much. So full credit, amazing performance and fantastic result.
Chelsea 4, Juventus 0 then. And what a performance from the Blues as they tore apart a patched-up Juve team on Tuesday night. Simon, I thought there were a lot of similarities in this match with the one at Leicester on Saturday, and therefore you kind of left wondering, were Chelsea really great? Were Juve really terrible? Was it a bit of both?
A little bit of both, but I would sort of emphasise the positives on Chelsea. I just think they're just so good at the moment. Everything about the way they're playing, just full of confidence. Of course, what's beautiful about what's going on again is the academy boys sort of coming to the fore. Chelsea are just sort of thriving off their energy, their quality, their ability. The crowd are buzzing off them as well. There just seems to be an extra roar when a Reece James pile driver goes in, or or Hudson-Odoi finishes at the back post. It just seems to be a... and Chalobah, of course, I shouldn't forget him opening the scoring. There just seems to be such a great vibe about the place, playing with great, great confidence. So I would say it's more an indication of how Chelsea are getting stronger and stronger as each game goes on.
Yeah, it was the Cobham kids who took the headlines, but Thiago Silva, the subject of Dom's post-match piece, I mean, I said Thiago Gold earlier in the season. I think he might be Thiago Platinum now. I saw a couple of people opining, Dom, that he might be the best free transfer in ever, certainly in recent times, and not just because of his own performances, but because of the tangible effect that he's had on the likes of Christensen and Chalobah. I think it almost looks like he's getting younger rather than older.
Yeah, I mean, to consider that he's regularly now playing three games in a week, which was something that he wasn't supposed to be able to do when he arrived. I think that sums him up. I think he came back on, we were trying to work this out, so weren't we, about Thursday last week, and he's in the team for a Saturday lunchtime kickoff at the weekend. He's playing on Tuesday night against Juventus, and you'd assume that he would be in the starting lineup against Manchester United at the weekend as well. He just oozes quality. He's so calm and authoritative on the ball. He made one mistake on Tuesday night, but he rectified it with tearing back to reach Alvaro Morata's little dinked finish and hacking it off the goal line with a volley and putting his body on the line, really. He damaged his left ankle in that incident, but the bloke has become a talisman for the team, inspirational figure across the back line. And it's, I mean, how could those kids not learn from him? That was the question I was asking, really. I mean, Chalobah described him as an idol in the build-up to the game, and every day he must be picking up things in training from him. Positioning, calmness on the ball, working out, reading a game, working out, you know, the pass that you're going to make before you receive it. That's what he does. His distribution is excellent. Within that back three, it really suits him because he's got energy either side of him, so he doesn't ever get sort of dragged out to one flank, as he might do in a back four. But he is a brilliant, brilliant player, a player of the highest calibre, and a player that I think we're sort of finally recognising his elite status in the Premier League now. He's probably been playing at this level for a long time, but coming to England, he's really just shown a new audience just how good he is.
Simon, will he get another contract if he wants one?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, it's all down to him, up to him. If he wants to stay, Chelsea will say yes, please. And it's again sort of backing up what Dom's saying. I think that's a real huge indication of just what a figure, what a character he is. And it's not just his performances on the pitch; it's his influence around the training ground. So, yeah, it's all up to him. If he wants to stay at Chelsea, Chelsea will keep him for sure.
But he needs to stay as well. I mean, you shouldn't forget that. He has set his targets on the Qatar World Cup, a mid-season World Cup. So to play at a club, an elite club like Chelsea, for the first 6 months, 5 months of next season will be key to him, you know, being at the standard to go to that tournament and hit the ground running. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer he gets another year. He's not playing like a 37-year-old. He's playing like a 25-year-old, really. And I think they'll manage him sensibly. And I think a lot of the credit probably does go down to the sports scientists and the way that they use him down at Cobham and in games. But, I mean, the bloke is class.
And let's talk about those Cobham kids then. Simon, how surprised are you that they've maintained their places in this Thomas Tuchel team? I noted in your latest piece for The Athletic, you mentioned that Callum, for example, played seven in a row for the first time for Chelsea. It's quite a meritocracy, isn't it? So they're there because they deserve to be there. But is it to Tuchel's credit that he's shown the faith in them, or is it to the players' credit that they've managed to keep up the quality to maintain a place in the team?
Well, you could argue, should I say a bit of both again? I mean, I wouldn't say every case is the same. For example, Reece James, I think, was always likely to be the starting right wing back for most of the season, because that's what he was starting to become. He was starting to become a regular under Tuchel, obviously, earlier in the year, and he played Champions League final, etc. Of course, Chalobah, no one saw this coming, And even if you saw, even if you sort of thought, okay, he's played a few games early on, some might have thought, well, it's just for now, just a short-term thing. But I think Chalobah's own performances have kind of made him sort of not undroppable, because obviously he's not going to be playing every week, but that there's trust there. And I think that's the thing about Tuchel, it's all about trust. If you get a chance and you play well, he picks you. It doesn't matter if you're a youngster or a veteran. What's interesting, Callum Hudson-Odoi has had to rely on a bit of luck with injuries to finally get, this is what I've been ranting on about, seems all year, to finally get a chance to play in his preferred position and a number of games. And then we could, my argument was always, and then we could finally see if Callum Hudson-Odoi is any good, because we've not really had that opportunity very much in the last 2 years. Well, 7 successive games, he's getting better with each one, he's getting more confident with each one. I thought it was very very significant that at Leicester, when Ziyech and Pulisic were about to come on, I was thinking, oh, is this Callum about to get hooked? No, he was one that stayed on. I then thought, oh, is that an indication that he's not starting against Juventus? No, he starts against Juventus, has another great game. So I think it's credit to Tuchel for sort of picking guys in form, credit for him to give youth a chance, but I think also an awful amount of credit to the guys themselves for taking their opportunity when they're in the team.
It looks like, Dom, there's going to be an opportunity for Marcos Alonso, maybe for an extended period of time too. Ben Chilwell and N'Golo Kanté both going down injured against Juventus, and it seems that Chilwell's is the more serious of the two injuries.
Yeah, that sounded like pretty grim news. He looked, I mean, when Kanté came off, he walked off and just straight down the tunnel. He didn't look in any obvious discomfort, but it was very different with Chilwell, who initially they called for a stretcher. Then I think he came off with two physios sort of holding him up. A third came in and helped him down the tunnel, and he was talking to Saul and Mason Mount, who was just sitting right next to the tunnel, and he was just talking about his knee. He was saying knee, it's a problem. He did not look happy. He looked as if he knew something serious had happened. Chelsea's stance is quite interesting on it. They're obviously reluctant to push him straight into the surgery. They're looking at the scans. They'll presumably have more scans when swelling goes down, in the hope that this is an injury that might heal itself, might not be quite as serious as initially feared, and there might be a chance that it can repair itself without the surgery, without major surgery anyway. But we'll have to see on that one, because for whatever happens, he looks as if he's out for the calendar year. If he has a surgery, then obviously it's going to be the season. And yeah, that does open it up again for Marcos Alonso to hopefully recapture some of the form that illuminated the start of the campaign. It does leave him a bit short in that area. I mean, I think they'd have to mix and match beyond that. And, you know, we've just spoken there at length about how brilliant it is to see Callum Hudson-Odoi playing in his natural position. But, you know, I think there might be a bit of mixing and matching at left wing back at some stage over the weeks and months ahead. And that might involve Callum filling in there occasionally. Might involve Cesar Azpilicueta sitting in there at times, just to give Marcos Alonso a breather, given the amount of workload that's placed on the wing backs in this system. But in the short term, Alonso is not going to be a problem. You know what he's going to get. He'll still be a threat going forward. Defensively, yeah, I mean, he's sort of similar standard to Ben Chilwell, maybe not quite as solid, but I think we know what we're going to get with Marcos Alonso, and it will certainly, if he brings the form that he showed in the Nations League with Spain last month, then Chelsea will be okay.
Somebody, I forget who, apologies, but somebody pointed out on Twitter this morning that Saul started Atletico Madrid's first two games this season at left wing back. So who knows, maybe he could go there too. But it's such a shame for Chilwell, isn't it, Simon? Because he'd worked so hard to get himself back into the team. You know, ironically, it was that match against Juventus in Turin when he came on at half-time that it really sort of turned for him. And it does affect the balance somewhat, because you don't get the same kind of energy from Alonso as you do from Chilwell. But then we've seen Chelsea cope pretty well with the injury absentees that they've had already this season.
Yeah, I feel like almost partly responsible, actually, because I wrote... I wrote a piece recently about why Chelsea won't have to sign anyone in January, with the caveat, unless there's a major injury. Within a week or two, there's a major injury. It is a massive blow, because I would argue Chilwell was in the form of his career, not just at Chelsea, but he for England as well. I mean, he's attacking. He wasn't just sticking out on the flanks. The amount of times he was moving within the width of the penalty area and sort of almost becoming another forward. It was extraordinary to watch. So there will be some adaptation, because him and Reece James, we'd sort of see them before the game, sort of having little chats on the pitch, almost like conspiring with each other about what they're about to do to the opposition. So Reece James, you'd imagine, is going to miss him quite a lot as well. But Marcus Alonso, I'm actually going to be writing a piece about this, which will probably be out in the morning. Marcus Alonso, he's the highest scoring defender in the Premier League since he arrived. So as far as backups go, not bad. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. You can sort of worry about him defensively. And Chelsea, you know, they can sort of have various other options, stumble their way through to January, and then there might be a few decisions to be made, whether they do sort of sign someone on loan, bring someone back from a loan. But it's a blow, but one that I've no doubts that Tuchel will find a way to manage.
I was just thinking about Ian Martson, Dom, who you wrote a piece on for The Athletic. He'd be the one, I suppose, wouldn't he? Who could potentially come back, you would think, as cover, but at least he's been playing football regularly this season.
Yeah, he was playing football regularly until he got sent off in the match immediately after that piece came out.
The Athletic jinx again.
Exactly. he has done very, very well. He has been playing regular football, so he will be up to speed. But it's more the, you know, whether he would be ready to step into the Premier League and do that job. It may be an option to look at. I don't know whether there's a recall on that. And usually these recalls kick in if a player isn't playing for that club that he's been loaned to, and therefore Chelsea bring him back to send them out again. Now Ian Martson's very much a part of a Coventry team that's currently ensconced in the playoff places in the Championship. I think they would be very reluctant to let him go. So it would have to be a pretty exceptional clause that's been put in there that allows Chelsea to call him back if he's just going to sit and be cover at Chelsea. I think it's probably more beneficial for him to stay at Coventry and play regular football for the rest of the season, particularly when you've got alternative options. And We shouldn't forget that Azpilicueta hasn't really featured as of late. I mean, he has been waiting for a chance to get back into this team. He's clearly not going to be ousting Reece James at right wing back anytime soon. And it feels that there are enough options at centre half for Tuchel not to have to consider using him there. So maybe left wing back is actually a role that he might be able to play a part in. Callum Hudson-Odoi likewise, and Salwan's intriguing, and I'll be honest, that's something that I hadn't even considered. But it's if he's played there before, and given, as Simon says, that the Chelsea wingbacks aren't pinned to the flank, they're not wingers. They sort of operate in this central area, and Chilwell was popping up in attacking in areas because that's what the system allows him to do. I mean, it's his instinct as well. But you know, if Saul is drifting effectively into midfield from a left wingback starting berth, then that might actually suit him and might offer him a route into the team and to justify the loan move from Atletico in the first place. So there are a few options there that Tuchel will be able to explore.
We'll just have to see how that unfolds. The other game in Group H finished 1-1, Zenit getting a very lucky late penalty away to Malmo. It means that they finish third, so it means that they don't need to get a result when Chelsea go to St. Petersburg next month. All Chelsea need to do is match Juventus' result and they will finish top of the group. Before that game away to Zenit, though, comes the visit of Manchester United to Stamford Bridge on Sunday, and we'll look ahead to that next. Manchester United at home, always one of the most anticipated games of this season, but rarely, if ever, can the Red Devils have visited Stamford Bridge in such a state. Last weekend's latest gubbing, this time at Watford, spelt the end for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Joining us now to give us the latest on United is the magnificent Adam Crafton. Adam, we're told that it's Maurizio Pochettino who, well, he seemingly wants to come as much as United want him, but that's going to be at the end of the season, is it fair to say?
It looks incredibly like that. I think there was definitely, you know, stories earlier this week that Pochettino would like to come to Manchester United and would like to do that in the middle of the season. United would quite like that as well. The problem for both of them is there's a third opinion in the room, and that's Paris Saint-Germain, who have him under contract until the summer of 2023, and certainly as of before the game last night against Manchester City when they lost. The feeling at PSG was they wanted to keep him at least until the end of the season.
Do United supporters look at Chelsea with a bit of envy at the moment? I ask that because obviously Chelsea got rid of a club legend. The first sign of trouble ended the season as European champions. United gave Solskjaer chance after chance. I know he's a beloved figure, but is there a feeling amongst some that they wish they'd been a bit more ruthless?
I think there's certainly supporters who felt, you know, at different stages of Solskjaer's reign, that United could have made a change, that there could have been more ruthlessness. I don't think as a whole Man United fans are looking at Chelsea and thinking that's how they want their club to be run. Whether that's right or wrong, I think United fans, obviously having, you know, mostly experienced one person being in charge for a very long time, would still like to repeat that with another person. How realistic that is another question. I think where they will be looking at Chelsea is, you know, there was a PSG manager who left last year, whose reputation had taken a little bit of a battering in Paris, looked a little like, you know, people were questioning whether he could manage at the very highest level with the biggest players, and has then left that environment and thrived in a different environment in the Premier League. So I think that's where United fans might be looking at, you know, particularly PSG's performance against Manchester City, which was pretty poor. And thinking, okay, but what could he do when he's in an environment that would be a bit easier to manage?
And in terms of that environment above him, is that changing as well? And again, there's a kind of comparison with Chelsea, isn't there, in that Marina Granovskaya has just won an award for how good she is at her job, and yet United have been kind of crying out for a director of football for a long time. Is that what Darren Fletcher is ultimately going to be?
I don't think so. They've got... I mean, everyone's at the moment a little bit trying to work out what different people are doing at Manchester United. So you've got Ed Woodward, who's the executive vice chairman. He announced after the Super League that he'd be leaving by the end of the year. We're now told that he'll be staying on in a sort of consultancy role, which the clubs say is kind of typical of sort of major businesses when a CEO leaves, that, you know, they would remain available if needed for any expertise. Obviously, the counter argument to that is it's normally based on that person actually doing quite well in the job in the first place, and that you would want that expertise. So that's where the argument may come in there. They then have the guy who's meant to replace him, who currently runs the commercial side, in Richard Arnold. They also have a football director in John Murtagh. They have a technical secretary in Darren Fletcher. They have a negotiator with Matt Judge. And then they also have Joel Glazer. So it's a little bit unclear as to what that structure is. I mean, we've been told that even Fletcher himself has been a little bit confused as to what exactly his role entails, whether it's, you know, with a view to becoming a sort of hands-on sporting director. But, you know, on Tuesday night in Villarreal, he was on the bench alongside Michael Carrick, effectively coaching the team. So it's a little bit TBC in terms of Fletcher's role going forward. Sorry, that was a very convoluted answer, but it's a very convoluted situation.
You come to the right place. Hi, Adam. Speaking about on the football side of things, and the team side of things, what are United going to do without Maguire and Varane, do you think? How do you think they're going to line up defensively?
Good question. And it might be one that the interim manager, it might be one of those games where you think, oh, I'll just sit in the stand, take this one in while Michael Carrick takes the team, if there's an appointment before then, which I think there might be. So I would expect, I mean, Victor Lindelof will play, and you would imagine that Eric Bailly would play alongside him. United might decide to go to a three at the back. They've done that before against Chelsea, and Luke Shaw's played at the left of that back three before, and then you could have Alex Terz as a sort of a left wing back and Wan-Bissaka as a right wing back, which would allow you to match Chelsea up in terms of shape. I think from United's point of view, you know, given the way it's been going over the last few weeks, the priority for them will be, you know, can we go there and attempt to keep a clean sheet? And, you know, whatever we think about United, they will always create a couple of chances with the players that they've got. So, you know, they've had success against Chelsea over the last couple of years. I think Chelsea have found it hard to beat Manchester United. Found it hard to score goals against Manchester United over the last couple of seasons. So it'll be interesting to see now that Tuchel's, you know, properly into his rhythm. Chelsea look pretty dominant at the moment. How Chelsea try and unlock United.
All right. It's not a great connection, Adam, so we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Cheers, Adam. Oh, he's gone.
That Wi-Fi connection, indicative of Manchester United's season so far. Not very good. Simon, I wanted to ask you about Mason Mount, because you've been writing about him on the site today, and the fact that he's been kind of not forgotten about, but as the player of the year, you'd think he'd be to the fore when we're talking about academy kids. But the fact that he's had this problem with his teeth means that's not been the case in recent weeks.
Yeah, and not just that, you know, the as I've sort of pointed in the piece, that he played 69 games for club and country last season, had a late return from his holiday post-Euros, which meant he didn't really have a proper pre-season. He suffered an injury, a minor injury, which ruled him out of the Man City and Juventus defeat. It's been very stop-start. He's not had that rhythm of games to get into the form that we've come to know and expect. And it has led to some bizarre sort of rumblings of discontent in certain media outlets and talking about contracts and he's not signing and he could be moving to, I mean, Liverpool was mentioned. It was all really random. And what makes it all more bizarre is there's none of it is true. There's nothing in it at all. They've not even started talking about a contract, let alone rejecting anything. So I just thought it was one interesting that, you know, after Juventus, there's all this chat about the academy boys, and Mason's name wasn't sort of one of them, which is a really unusual thing, because he's basically been at the forefront of the Chelsea academy and in the Chelsea first team chat ever since Frank Lampard gave him his debut against Manchester United. But I don't think there's anything to worry about. Yes, he lost some weight because of the wisdom teeth and the illness that he suffered from it. But from what I'm hearing, he's charring away Simon Johnson style to put the weight back on. But unlike Simon Johnson, he's doing a lot of exercise. And
really reached the point in this podcast where you refer to yourself in the third person.
Yeah. It's a new low. I've got no concerns. He'll soon be back to the Mason Mount, you know, And I, in a weird kind of way, I think it might sort of be a bit of a blessing in disguise, in that because he's not played that many minutes by his standards, that he'll be sort of coming on strong in what is going to be a very long season over the next 6 months.
Athletic.com/ChelseaPod to go to sign up to read that article from Simon Johnson. Remember, it's just £1 a month for 12 months if you take advantage of the Black Friday deal, and you won't get any made-up transfer rumours either. In terms of other team news, Dom, for this game, or team selection, I should say, does the fact that Romelu Lukaku didn't get off the bench on Tuesday night mean that he's more or less likely to feature here?
That will depend upon how he trains on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, I guess. I came away from the bridge on Tuesday thinking that it was probably less likely that he started the game on the Sunday, and that maybe Timo Werner coming off the bench and scoring a goal sets him up as the number nine in that team. Largely because I didn't think Christian Pulisic really worked in that role. He looked another player that was slightly shorn of match fitness and still rusty, and it was surprising that he started so soon, really. And Kai Havertz, we're waiting on an update on the state of his hamstring, and hopefully that isn't too serious. But again, having sat out in midweek, is he likely to come straight back into the starting lineup? It sort of feels a bit unlikely. So I it wouldn't surprise me if Werner is the one that begins on Sunday, in the hope that he brings the confidence of that goal into the game and can stretch United and discomfort what will be a makeshift centre half pairing as Adam has just described. But Lukaku, I know we said on this podcast this time last week that Lukaku doesn't feel like the type of player that you ever want to see as a super sub, but you know, if he's required to go and ruffle some feathers later on and maybe offer a different kind of threat, a very different kind of threat to Werner, that's not a bad option to have. And if he's maybe gets a cameo, he'll be hungry, he'll be eager to make an impact, and you know, depending on what the state of the game is at that point, he could easily be the type of player to turn a match.
Well, as we've spoken about at great length, Chelsea have got fantastic depth to their squad, so whoever comes in, you think they'll be more than a match for Manchester United given their current state. It's a 4:30 kickoff UK time on Sunday, and of course we'll handle the fallout on Monday's pod. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-19s also faced Juventus on Tuesday in the UEFA Youth League, but they were beaten 3-1. Joe Haig got a late consolation for the Blues, but the result means Juve win the group. Chelsea go to Zenit next month, needing to avoid a defeat by a score of more than 3-1 to finish second and then go into the playoff round against a team from the domestic champions path for a place in the last 16. It makes perfect sense to somebody. There's an international break in the women's game this weekend, so no game for Emma Hayes' team. Good news, though, for Millie Bright. She's going to captain England for their World Cup qualifiers against Austria and Latvia. In terms of the development and academy teams, the men's under-23s host Brighton in PL2 on Friday night, whilst the under-18s go to Derby on Saturday morning for their latest game in the Premier League Cup. You can watch both of those on Chelsea's online platforms. I'll be commentating on the Derby game, but don't let that put you off. Right, you know what it's time for now, listener. It's Thursday. It means it's a quiz. You know the format by now. Three questions each. Chelsea and Manchester United are the theme. Here we go. Simon, you did so well last week. It's interesting. We don't often have the same fixture as we did last week, but it is Fifield against Johnston again. Dom, you can go first. Here's your first question. What was the score in the two Premier League games between Chelsea and Man United last season?
0-0.
Oh, perfect. Wow, didn't even draw breath. That's quite the flex for Simon. Right, here's your first question, Simon. See if you can answer it in a heartbeat like Dom just did.
What was the score in 1972?
Which Manchester United player scored an own goal in the 2020 FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea?
Stop laughing, Dom. let me just name a beleaguered defender. Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire is absolutely correct.
Good, very, very timely, actually. If only he was playing on Sunday.
Dom, here's your second question. Chelsea beat United 1-0 in the 2018 FA Cup final. Willian came off the bench in that game. After it, he posted a picture on Instagram of the team celebrating, but with manager Antonio Conte covered up. And he blamed this on his daughter pinching his phone. Few believed him. What emoji did Willian / his daughter use to cover up Conte with in the picture?
Was it a trophy?
It was a trophy, yes. Well, several trophies. yeah. It was a bit mean, but there we
Ditch
go.
Ditch the clown option then, that's a bit odd.
Yeah, that would have been a step too far, wouldn't it? Okay, so it's 2-1. Here's your second question, Simon. I don't think you're going to like this one very much. In his 19 games against them, how many goals did Eden Hazard score against United?
Well,
there was the cup final goal.
Yeah.
There was an FA Cup game at Old Trafford, I remember him bending one in the top corner. I think, did he score in the league game? So that's it. I'm going to go five.
Oh, that is magnificent. What a standard we've set today. Five is absolutely on the money.
Frode Grodas.
It's all going to come down to the last question. What a quiz this week. Right, Dom, this is your final question. It's not an easy one, I'll be honest. In October 2012, Chelsea beat Man United 5-4 in a ding-dong League Cup tie. On the bench for the Blues that night was an academy graduate midfielder. Currently at Millwall, he never played for the Chelsea first team, though he did play against them whilst at Wolves in an FA Cup game in 2017. Name that midfielder.
George Saville.
Oh, this is just extraordinary.
Oh, my word. Well done.
That's my knowledge of South London football, that's all.
Well, is that or Lucy shared the Google Doc that I wrote with you too? And I'm not ruling that out, I'll be honest. 3-2 then. Simon, I'm not sure you've registered a win this season, but this draw would feel like a victory, just given the standard that's been set today. Can you maintain it with your final question? Chelsea were beaten 5-3 by United at Stamford Bridge in 1998. Fill in the blank at the end of this sentence. That was the last time that Chelsea... So 5-3, 1998. It was the last time that Chelsea...
Lost a third round tie?
Oh, well, this is incredible. Yeah. I mean, maybe I've got it. Maybe I've got to take a long look at myself. Maybe these questions are just far too easy.
The brain works.
That is an incredible stat, by the way, isn't it? 1998 was the last time they lost an FA Cup third round tie. Simon, I'm imagining you're just going to brush that off and say, yeah, of course. But for the likes of me and Dom, who support teams who very rarely get past...
Can I throw in a bit of context, a bit of a perspective here? Since my team last scored a goal in any cup competition, Manchester City have scored 131 cup goals.
That's a beauty. But I would say, in answer to your point, Matt, the funny thing was, it used to be fairly commonplace for Chelsea to be knocked out third, fourth round. It's just that since they got to the cup final in 94, they've had a sort of great love affair with the competition, but the years before that, I remember sort of just as a kid, sort of every sort of FA Cup, there'd be like the predictions on Football Focus, and there'd always be one guy that would go, "This year my tip is Chelsea," and then later on they'd be knocked out at home by Bristol City. And it's sort of like the prediction lasted just a few hours. But that is a remarkable stat. Yeah, 23? Going to be 24 years in January, I would imagine, unless they get a very tough draw.
Yeah, a love affair with the FA Cup, helped in no small part by the fact that they spent about 15 years in a row getting drawn at home to a League Two side, which...
Yeah, exactly.
that does help.
Right, we're just about done for today. I'm still reeling. I'm trying to just pick myself back together after that incredible quizzing. Dom, we're going to plug some more stuff before we go. The Stephen Watt piece is finally up.
Oh, yes, it's there. Yeah, it's there. It was fun to write that, to be honest. He's a good man and someone that I think he's a bit... He feels to be underachieved as a player. I think largely born of the fact that so many clubs wanted him when he was a kid up in the north coast of Scotland, and virtually all, I think every Premier League team bar Manchester United tried to get him on trial. So it's nice that he can look back and see some positives there, that he did play for a title winning team, albeit for only 2 minutes at the end of the season, but he was on the pitch, and Simon would give his right arm and leg to be in that situation. Simon Johnson, sorry, I should say.
Yeah, yeah, Simon Johnson is all over that, yeah.
Simon, are you at Stamford Bridge on Sunday?
No, Dom has got the privilege.
You've got Watford though, that's all right though.
I've picked the glamour game, the real glamour game, but who knows, it might be the harder game, given what Claudio Ranieri's been doing. But Dom, I'm sending Dom forth to bring the result for Chelsea.
Excellent. Let's hope it is a positive result. It's hard to see how it wouldn't be at the moment, but this is football, isn't it? One last plug for that offer then, athletic.com/ChelseaPod. If you're not currently a subscriber to The Athletic, our Black Friday deal will let you sign up for just £1 a month for a full 12 months. It ends at midnight on November the 29th. We will be back on Monday when we will be reflecting on that Man United game and looking ahead to the midweek match with Watford, plus plenty more beside. Until then, many thanks to Dom, to Simon and to Lucy and to you, listener. We'll speak to you again Monday. Have a good weekend. Bye for now.
The Athletic.